Hey everyone, I'm back in Germany now and finally getting more settled and back into a routine which is helping me a lot to carve out space for the fun things in life, such as recording podcast episodes and talking to people about what really matters to us. Today's show is the result of Miller from Hermetic Arts asking in their Instagram stories if we'd like them to answer questions about the occult, witchcraft, or anything else. And I thought to myself, heck, I want to talk to this dude about all of it, and I want him on my podcast so we can share this. The next day, we met on Zoom and did it. Miller is a witch. Their work and mine are totally different, but when I came across their Instagram, I was intrigued by their vibe and authenticity. Miller lets his words follow action and doesn't put up a show for their followers, and that's exactly my kind of people. So I wanted to know more about them, their work, and how they got to where they are right now. In this episode of Gaia's Healings podcast, Miller is sharing exactly that and so much more with all of us. They tell their story of their awakening, how church helped to open them up for the act of ritual, but also how their relationship fell apart and how witchcraft is a part of their daily life. There's also a great lot of advice on how to use and work with psychedelics and substances, which is something I never felt drawn to, but would now consider giving a try under the right circumstances. Oh, folks, it's been a great and amazing talk, and I'll just shut up now and we'll let you enjoy listening to our conversation. Hey, Miller, how are you doing?
I'm doing great, Mandy. How are you?
I'm really awesome, too. And yeah, I'm so glad that we kind of spontaneously are sitting here together now. And we've been following each other just for a couple of weeks on Instagram. And I always thought that you seem to be doing really cool stuff that's totally like out of my realm. And one of the things I've always been wondering about is like, what's the story of your awakening? How did this whole thing for you begin? And how did it all come together into your hermetic arts and your witchcraft right now?
Okay, awesome. Yeah, thank you so much for having me. This was just yesterday that we kind of had this idea, and now we're on Zoom doing it. So I am quite excited and very thankful for you having me on. The story of my awakening, I won't lie, like we had maybe talked about a couple weeks ago, it's a little long. I have some notes here just to kind of keep me on track, but like most people that were born, so I was born in Arkansas, which is the deeper south of America. I was raised Christian, but Roman Catholic. I went to a Catholic school when I was in preschool and kindergarten. I have all of the, or four of the seven sacraments. My parents thought it was really funny, actually. I chose Saint Augustine as my patron saint back in the day. And he was a little bit of a troublemaker in his youth, and would rebel against his teachers that told him to, like told him to study. Like, you need to study more. Like, you're really smart. You just need to like study a little bit more. And he was like, No, I'm not gonna do that. And then he became the patron saint of theologians and printers, which I think is also, I'll try to loop that point back in at the end. Now, when I went through this, I thought of some really cool like crossover things that I wouldn't have really thought about unless I'd really thought about this question. But so Catholic, but when I was really little, and somebody just asked me this and I answered the question on my podcast, is what is my first occult memory? And for the people closest to me, they might be surprised that it's not witchcraft, that it's not something like, you know, seeing Charmed on TV or seeing some show that really, you know, talked it up. My first really big occult influence and memory is Egypt. And because I don't know what sparked that, to be honest. I just know that when I was about 9 or 10 years old, I had half a dozen books on Egypt. I had full color photo books. I had a little set that was a ceramic human that you could open up and remove all of their organs and put into the canopic jars. And then you could wrap the ceramic body with gauze and put him in his sarcophagus and like literally, I mean, complete the whole process of mummification. And
How old were you at that time?
9, 10. Okay. I moved to, or was about to move to Georgia, and I was 2001. So yeah, I would have been 10 years old at the earliest. And I mean, I was obsessed. I don't think my parents quite understood then I saw The Mummy and I wanted to be I didn't want to be the Brendan Fraser. I didn't want to be the archaeologist. I wanted to be Ardeth Bay, the guy on the hill on top of that black stallion protecting the secrets of Egypt. I mean, I really that is who I want to be. Like, I used to want to get those tattoos on my face.
He is the coolest character, to be honest. I think so too.
He is. Beautiful actor too. But so that's, and then of course, when I was really little, witchcraft and magic, you know, had always been, we acted as if we had magic when we were children. Almost like it was, what's it called? Like just commonplace that like I wiggle my fingers at you or I do this or I say these things and we are magic. Even when so growing up Catholic and going through, and I'll tell you, I was very good at church. I had people like comment to my mom regularly, like, he knows when to sit, he knows when to stand, he knows when to pray, he knows when to do all of the things. Like, we're so impressed. And comically, I'll be like, that was just, kids don't really have a choice and they just like kind of follow the routine. But it was my first emergence into the act of ritual. And for that, even though I don't have the same love probably for the Catholic Church that I did when I was younger, I will be forever grateful because that is a huge part of my practice today. It's looking back, been a huge part of my life without even knowing it, ritualizing our mundane and adding like that ritual structure to our lives is something that helped me so much. So growing up, my parents and the rest of my family kind of left the church actually. In high school, I was the only member of my family actively going to church. And now I was going to a Baptist church, not a Catholic church. So not maybe as strict and as ritual-based, but very community-based. In the South, you basically have to be a member of a church or you're ostracized. But I really enjoyed it at the time. Community-wise, and for those reasons, it was really great. I mean, I went to can't speak this morning. I went to church probably 3 or 4 times a week.
Wow.
Youth group, teaching the younger, like middle school youth group, leading prayer circle, like going to what we call big church and Bible study on Sunday. It was a huge part of my life. And I was really good at it. Now, while all of this is now 2010, I graduated from high school, leaving high school, going to Penn State University from Texas, basically leaving almost pretty much a devout creationist and a devout Christian, almost unshakable in some of my thoughts. Now, in the background, nothing, and people have, like, I've gotten into interesting conversations with people about this. I know now that I'm so far away from the path that I'm on now and very different from maybe the paths that I had started to walk when I was a child, magic never went away. Like, even though religion was at the forefront, maybe, like, there was nothing, I don't even think my pastor at the time, who I loved like a dad, could have told me like magic is not real. I would have believed that magic is evil or, against our religion. But I would have never believed somebody to say that magic is not real. It's always been a constant. Maybe that's like my own bias and buildup that I just refuse to believe any other narrative, but I truly do not. And then I went to college, and this is kind of the start, I would say, of the awakening, even though knowing in the background that I always believed magic is real and I had always had not necessarily gifts like clairaudience or clairvoyance, but feelings and being one with nature. I'm also really good with animals. Like, people are like, my dog hates people, and I'm like, bring it on. Like, it's a no. Like, I No, it's just impossible. I haven't met one that's like, I hate you, get away from me. Like, an animal that I can't charm is actually quite uncommon. But I got to college and I started having more intellectually based conversations, right? Things that weren't so much faith or heart based. We're just having intelligent conversations. And as someone who would characterize themselves as, I would think, fairly intelligent, I'm not a brainiac, but I'm not dumb. I was having a really, really difficult time defending my position just from a factual basis with regards to like creationism and versus evolution. And I feel very lucky to have some people just as smart as me with a little bit different life experience to kind of pull back the layers of, or the walls that I had built that Christianity emboldened me to build around myself to protect their narrative. And that was really, I won't lie, there was a lot of like negative, it ruined my relationship with like my faith at the time, unfortunately. Well, fortunately, I guess, because I think it illuminated more, even though it was a huge teardown for me. But I went like full blown, like, I was super jaded, wouldn't bow my head to say a prayer, like, wouldn't, like, I was mad. I felt like I had been lied to, like I had been made to be stupid.
What did you study?
What do you mean?
At university, what did you study? What were your topics?
Oh, this is just conversations with friends. I majored in business. I have a major in supply chain management information systems with a minor in English and a minor in labor and employment relations, which is basically HR. So I just, these were just conversations, like me and my friends getting drunk or stoned and having like legitimate soul searching conversations. And like I said, I couldn't defend them, like without saying things like, oh, I just believe, or I just know. And those arguments are, or those reasons for ending an argument or saying like, that's the end all be all are fine. Like I would, you know, I probably use that with regards to magic and things like that. But when we're talking about facts, and I think there's a big difference in like, when we get to the definitions of magic and the occult, I think it'll make a little bit more sense, but there are things that we can factually prove. It doesn't, and the things that we can't factually prove does not mean that they don't exist or that they're not real. We just do not have the tools available to us to factually prove them.
Exactly, yeah.
Things like the fact that you can look into the Hubble telescope and see the Big Bang seconds after it happened kind of ruin the God created the world the way that that I was told to believe it. I also now know that my beef was never with Christianity. It's never been with the Abrahamic religions in general, but it is Christians that are abusing the doctrine in which they prescribe without truly understanding the tenets of their religion that have messed with me. That, and I think that we would find, you know, if you polled young people my age that grew up in the South and grew up like that, if they had similar experiences where they went maybe somewhere where the resounding opinion wasn't the same as their own, and if they could not defend that, I mean, it was maddening for me. I was like, wow, I feel so dumb that I cannot like argue this point, and I believe it so strongly. And it felt like a little bit of a brainwashing, honestly. Like I was having to repeal all of these layers of things that people had put on me. And I mean, I probably would have been better off just reading the Bible by myself at home, honestly, than like engaging in all of the things that I did with regards to the church, especially in high school. I mean, it was my daily life. I studied that Bible. Like I've read it multiple times from front to back. We would like memorize chapters of it and portions of it, and then like talk about like what this means in modern day life. I mean, and that's a lot of good. I mean, my favorite books of the Bible are Romans and James, two great books to read if you want to learn how to talk to people and how not to talk to people. There's a lot of good lessons in that book, but it's been cherry picked and changed so much that it's unfortunately untrustworthy for me. There is a gospel of Judas. There is a gospel of Mary Magdalene. Like all of these things that we're just not we're not given access to, we're not privy to. And it's funny because when I dove back into magic full force, and one of the reasons that my name is Hermetic Arts on Instagram is I dove into Solomonic magic, working the Goetia and really doing like Greco-Egyptian esotericism type stuff.
How did you come across that?
Do you know who Damien Eccles is?
Name-wise, yes, I've heard of him.
He has two books out, High Magic, The Practices That Helped Me Save My Life While on Death Row, and then Angels and Archangels, which just came out. Damien is another Arkansas native, like myself, and he was wrongfully convicted of murdering three little boys in the 90s because he was wearing basically a Black Sabbath t-shirt and had Aleister Crowley books in his house. It was a huge satanic panic thing. He, Jason Baldwin, and Jesse Miss Kelly spent 19 years in jail. Damien was on death row and in solitary confinement for over a decade. That's like some weird thing that's, my dad showed me that case when I was really little. My dad's was a crime scene investigator for 17 years in Arkansas. And that's a huge case because they're out now because we know that they didn't do it. But the way the courts worked, they had to basically say, well, yeah, we didn't do it, but the state can never try anyone else for this crime. So they'll never really get justice. So blah, 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 blah. Damien has been a huge part of my life in the background without him knowing it. And without me really knowing up until, you know, the last 10 years that he was a magician, that he practiced magic. I had read his other books, which were more memoir based, yada, yada, yada. So that, like, I was following him once he came out of prison, and he was like, I'm going to be doing a book on this topic. And then I just like dove in, pulled Golden Dawn material, Ricardi and Cicero, and really focused on that stuff. I did not like the rules. You had to do everything this way. You had to do it A, B, C, D. This is the equation. You cannot deviate from the equation. How am I supposed to get a lion skin belt in 2014 or 2015, you know, at the time? And I was still dealing with some negative buildup that I had with Christianity and the Goetia and the Solomonic path being so Abrahamic, and the talk of angels and demons and the programming that had to be undone with regards to demons. I just kind of like, I kept the energy work teachings, and I still work with some of those entities without going through the full blown Solomonic path, which a lot of grimoire purists will tell you is not possible, but I know multiple witches that talk to demons from the Goetia without a triangle of art, myself included. And, so that's kind of where Hermetic Arts was born. And I was going to use my account to kind of like talk about Hermeticism and really kind of focus on that side of the path. And at some point, again, like the rules and the programming, just like, it wasn't allowing for, I was like, it doesn't have to be easy, right? Magic doesn't always have to be easy, but it didn't need to be as difficult and as strenuous on my like mental process as when I was starting out that it needed to be. And so about that time, I had, you know, been following more people on social media and finding, you know, trying to find some mentors and teachers. And, you know, at the time I didn't know it, but I followed Melanie at Seven Sisters, who Andy just recently interviewed, and Marley at Maiden and Crow, who are now the dynamic duo that represent House of Gnosis, which is where I get a lot of, it's a great place to get spiritual tools and witchcraft tools, ritual tools. But by following them and engaging in conversation, and I really kind of threw myself then into more of a traditional witchcraft path, which is something that I really wanted to do when I was younger. I forgot to mention this. I had like a little book of shadows at some point in my life when I was a child, and my parents found it, and it was not a good conversation. It wasn't like you're going to hell so much as just like, this is bad. Like, this is not good. I remember going to Spencer's one time and not even knowing, right? But like being drawn to like a goat head on like a sword, like kind of necklace. And I bought it. I was like, I love this. Like, it's because I'm creepy. Like, I've always been creepy. Like, my mom and me joke now. I'm like, are you really like that concerned? Like, I was the kid like making like people out of mud and like wanting to like talk to them and play with them when I was a kid. Like, like I was weird. Always like the creepy stuff, the dead stuff. Like, I think she gets it now, but she doesn't like some of the, she struggles with the darkness element of it. Like that it's all dark. And you know, a lot of like the new age world is focused on this love and light. And like when you meditate, it's light and it's this. And when I take people on journey and when I meditate, we're going into the womb. We are going into the deep, dark pit of the earth. I will make people pass through all of the layers of the crust and the mantle. Like that is so easy for me to do, is to just go dark. I get that it's easier for some people to go light, but that's, we're doing the same thing. You're just using different correspondences.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, I'm a bit struggling with these new age people that like everything is love and light and you can manifest anything. And it's like, no, fuck. It's not everything is love and light. That's just bypassing. Right. And Andy said it so often. Jessari talks about it all the time. And that is just spiritual bypassing. And I think you just need to have balance, you know, at least for me, that's really important. And it's like, of course there should be the light, but it also absolutely takes shadow work and looking at your dark sides too. You cannot become lighter without like looking at the dark stuff.
Absolutely.
In my opinion, but yeah, well, everyone is on their own journey in the end, and I have no right to tell anybody what to believe or what to do or which path to follow. If the new age everything's love and light resonates with somebody, then please by all means go for it. So yeah,
I just like you said, I won't knock anyone like individually per se, but there, you know, we say it in witchcraft all the time too, like witchcraft without shadow work isn't witchcraft. Like, if we look at like the origins of witchcraft and like these people on the fringes of society who were really like belittled and not accosted, but like kept separate and were only really called upon when shit in the mundane world wasn't going the way that the common folk or the muggles wanted it to. And then they went and sought help from the witch. I said it too at the beginning of COVID. Don't all y'all start asking any of us that know anything about herbal correspondence to make you some kind of tea or some kind of immunity thing. Because if you didn't think about like your relationship with this witch or this person in your life that can provide these things at the forefront, like people are always going to be reaching out to us for like elderberry syrups and things like that. Like, you know, any kitchen witch that can do that is just, so the last couple of years I've been going to Salem for my birthday. I'm sad this year that I won't be able to go for a third time. Third time in a row too, which would have been great. But my birthday is 5 days before Halloween. Ooh. So going to Salem on my birthday means that I have to also deal with all of the suburban white women from America wearing their pointy little hats and going, and you know, playing up, getting to play witch for a little while, which is fine. I just feel like there are some, you know, if I was being really staunch and like, I don't know, there's a part of me that I keep held back with regards to how people treat the community, even though we are not, you know, not persecuted and not, you know, we can be out of the broom closet for the most part and actively, you know, socially accepted practitioners of magic, even though a lot of people think we're fucking nuts and that we're Looney Tunes. But there's a huge stigma associated with what I do, with what you do, with what Andy does, with what we all do. You know, shows like The Chilling Adventures of Sabrina and things like that, like, don't make it easier, in my opinion. But that's entertainment, and life imitates art, or art imitates life. So maybe that's also a good thing that we have something, a TV show that literally mentions the five books of the Lumegeton in the first episode of the first season. I was like, I have issues with that because I don't want 12-year-olds Googling Ars Goetia and finding the register of 72 spirits under King Solomon. I don't want people messing with that until they're ready. I also don't think you should be doing witchcraft or any kind of real hardcore spiritual work until you're at least 18. That would be my personal choice. Like, if I had children, I'd be like, we can do some stuff. We can, you know, set up an altar. Let's work on ancestor veneration. Let's do like all of the basics and all those things. But like spell work, I don't think these TikTok witches trying to mess with the moon, even though they can't, should be even trying to do stuff like that, because it promotes this really weird idea of what magic and what witchcraft already is or is and isn't. We already kind of have a difficult enough time of getting our point across and making these notions and these concepts that we work with every single day not seem like some guy took too much acid and is trying to explain the clockwork orange of his mind to people. Anyone that's done psychedelics will know that once you've done psychedelics, you can talk to another person who's done psychedelics and almost anything that you say will make sense because they've had the awakening, that experience to know that those things are possible. Even though they could never maybe see the same thing that you saw, it doesn't sound like, oh my God, this guy's crazy. Like, I remember telling somebody who had never done acid about an acid trip, and they're like, you are giving me anxiety. This sounds awful. And then I tell the same story to somebody who has dosed before, and they're like, oh, like, have you thought, and they're like, you can almost not diagnose, but break down like that experience and have a real conversation and maybe even get to the root of why you saw that and why you experienced it. If you're doing psychedelics, by the way, anybody listening to this out there, and you're not walking away learning at least one new thing about yourself, if not a couple new things about yourself, you're doing psychedelics wrong. And I wouldn't do them. Also, please don't do psychedelics just to get fucked up, because they're tools to opening consciousness and reprogramming the brain. And they should be treated with respect and reverence.
Would you recommend? No, not at all. I think it's great that you talk about it, because to be honest, I'm not doing psychedelics at all. It's just like, it's not my calling. I don't feel drawn to it. I'm fine with people doing it. I don't condemn it, but I'm glad that about all the things you just said, because I think lots of people are not aware of that. And there's a lot of abuse going on with psychedelics. Although during the last year, I heard more people talking about it and using substances to do their work. And so I can see real benefits in it now, but still it's not my calling. But would you recommend people trying it?
So just so I'm clear, I've only done mushrooms. So mushrooms I've done 3, maybe 4 times, and I've done acid 3 times. Usually within like a couple years of each other. I do not do that. This is not something, if I do acid, I already did acid once this year, I won't be doing it again in 2020. I take like very long breaks because I've seen how abuse and repeated use can really mess up, unfortunately, like your bearing here in reality. I do recommend it though. And if you're more of an earth-centered person, I would recommend trying mushrooms maybe first before acid. If you're don't feel like you're a very super grounded person, I would maybe try acid first. I've had revelatory experiences, like big time. The first time I did it was probably, you know, I can't like maybe pin down one specific thing, but it's definitely benefited or amplified my awakening in some points. I remember my buddy looking at me, and I'm a pretty like shaky person sometimes. Like I can get real, it's not a medical condition. I just can get real, I have a lot of energy, just period, all the time. And I have to do something with it. And I was on acid, and it was my first time, and I was very nervous when we started, but super happy how it all turned out. And my buddy Tyler looked at me and said, first of all, I love you. Second of all, when have you ever been this still? And it was like, oh my gosh, I looked at my body and I was just like, I don't know. Like, cause I literally was like always a restless leg, restless hand. Something was moving. I even do this sometimes. Like I just go back and forth between my fingers to have something to do. And from that like trip, I like kind of took that lesson with me to like every so often, just kind of like look at my body and like, can I be that still again? And when I'm sitting in sacred space, that's another thing where like, I'd be like, am I as still as I could possibly be? So the answer to your question is yes, I believe everyone should experience psychedelics. Please don't overdo it. Get a couple of different people's opinion, find a friend who has done it. And do it with people that you love and you care about if you're going to do it with anybody at all. I did my first time I did mushrooms was with a friend who I love dearly and is like a brother to me now. But in the moment, we had not known each other long enough to really have a deep link, a connection that would have made the awkwardness probably subside. I wanted to talk, but I had nothing to talk to him about because I did not know him well enough. And it shifted the dialogue internal, and it was my first time experiencing that, and it was not it wasn't as pleasant as I probably would have liked it to be. I had another friend come over and like kind of like poke me in the chest and be like, I don't even know this person, like where's your confidence? And like, and then it like broke and I like snapped out of it and I was like, you know what, you're right, like I don't like this person. I mean, I was like on my couch wrapped in a blanket like all grumpy cat about just like the fact that I didn't have anything to say to Dane. Like, I mean, seriously, like, so if you are not prepared, if you have anything really negative going on in your life too, I will warn you. I don't think it's necessarily something you should avoid entirely because we've always got something going on in our lives. But if it's something real big, it's going to come out in your trip. You are going to have therapy with yourself, either internally, or I even sometimes do it aloud. I will have moments during trips where I'll be like, hey, remember that time you said that thing to Mandy? That wasn't cool, dude. She probably did not take that the way that you maybe thought she took it. And it probably really hurt her feelings. I mean, like it is therapeutic. It is beneficial. It is breaking down. You are not able to throw up a wall fast enough when you're on these substances to let your ego take the wheel. I mean, really, you are almost, I would say, like your inner child with your today mind on acid.
One of the things that kind of makes me pull away from it is like, I do not like the feeling of losing control over myself. So that's something that, like, I don't know, my image of like using substances is that like I'm not in control anymore. And also if I think about using it, like you said, whoa, that would like, I would need someone that makes me feel like they're really strong so they can provide a container that makes me feel really super safe.
Right. A babysitter. That's what we call that.
Yeah. No, seriously. I wouldn't want like a babysitter, to be honest.
I've been a babysitter for people. I've been a babysitter for people on acid, on mushrooms, on DMT. And what's the other one? They did like a research chemical, if someone's trying to give you a research chemical, guys, it's not acid. It's something completely made in a lab, and it's something that's a subset of acid, and it can really mess your brain up. So please make sure if you're going to do acid, make sure it's coming from a legitimate source. You can also easily buy a test kit online that is like $20, and it'll tell you what anything you're ingesting is.
Huh.
So I am a big proponent of drugs and magic, but not, I wouldn't say psychedelics for like a, you know, ritual use, unless it's something I've never been called to, at least. I'm a daily cannabis user. I smoke weed or cannabis. We need to stop calling it weed. We need to call it by its scientific name.
Makes it sound more professional.
Well, and so a lot of people don't know this, but weed has like a negative connotation in the mind. It was a marketing ploy that they came up with. And marijuana makes it sound Hispanic, which was another ploy by the Reagan administration to make the drug seem like it was all foreigners and people, you know, It's all coming from Mexico, is kind of the why we have those two terms. So as an advocate for cannabis, I think it's important that people know that weed and marijuana are not the preferred terms for that plant anymore. You know, it'd be like, I don't know, I'm not gonna even try to come up with an example, but because nothing's really been bastardized as much as cannabis has, especially by the just bigger industries in my country. It's pretty nuts.
Well, not only in your country, I think all over the world they're demonizing it. So right. Except for, well, maybe the Netherlands, they're fine with it. But yeah, so how does it all come together in your magic? How do you define magic, by the way?
Okay, so I had to think about this because, you know, everybody has like their own little definition for magic. You know, Aleister Crowley said it was
your people's definition of it, because it's like always so different from person to person. It's interesting.
So I would say that magic is the interaction and sometimes manipulation of the unseen variables at play in the equation of existence.
Mm-hmm. And so how does it make you a witch? How does making magic you a witch?
I think witch is owning, for me, it's owning the term, almost the term outcast. And when I threw myself back into magic, I lived alone. I lived in a very hermetically sealed lifestyle. I had a corporate job I was working from home. I mean, I literally didn't leave my house other than to get like groceries and you know, to travel for work. I would wake up on Saturdays at like 5 a.m. and go downstairs and paint for hours. That was like kind of my ritual. Part of my ritual was creating in some way. And now that's evolved to other types of creation. And I'm just starting now to do some products and some things like that as well. But when you say what, I feel like witch is, number one, I like that it's a general neutral term for a practitioner of magic, but the path specifically, I mean, I'm not a Wiccan. Wicca is not an ancient religion. Sorry for any Wiccans out there. Your religion was invented less than 100 years ago by a white man. I don't know. My relationship with the land and my relationship with spirit, I think, denotes witch. My first draw has always been to work with spirits of the dead, not even necessarily my ancestors, but other dead. Graveyards are a huge part of my work. I'm actually working on a couple different products to help other people with graveyard work because I think it is so important. I have patron spirits that I work with in local graveyards. I even have one back in Lancaster that every time I'll go back to visit, I will have to go visit her because I made a promise. Working with, I mean, herbs and like what, when I started, it was all, when I dove back in, it was high magic, right? It was ceremonial, Solomonic, like the, if we're talking about the degrees or the levels where they'll call, that's rich, again, rich Catholic white men who thought they knew the only way to practice magic and to make it really difficult to read and understand and practice so that only they could keep it. The Solomonic path, I know lots of people that practice it. I love them and I applaud them. But we have to understand that historically that is white supremacy in magic. It's what that is. It was a learned man's magic. It was only for the smart. Those books were only kept in Christian libraries while they made the cunning folk or the, you know, folk magic, what is witchcraft, you know, the lesser than the stupid people magic is kind of, I mean, it's kind of the dichotomy that they wanted to create. And so I think that this intersectionality that I, in my practice of this high, taking this kind of reclaiming parts of this very privileged, very, in my mind, negatively containered and concealed like section of practice, combining it with this lower, looked down upon method of practice and meeting it somewhere in the middle. I mean, we know that life isn't black or white, and magic isn't high or low. I exist in a gray space constantly. The Latin on my Instagram profile says, "Gray wolf seeks truth." And now that I said that, I think I have to add, so symbols have always been keys for me. As you look on my profile now, I'm definitely being more vocal and wanting to get more of that type of stuff out. I think that in the future, I'll be doing like a symbols and sigils class. And I'd really like to teach people how to make their own cipher, like the things, the glyphs and things that you're seeing on my profile. That is for other people. I have another one that's actually tattooed on my body. Oh my God, I've lost my train of thought.
No worries. It's been a lot of information and stuff, but it sounds so cool. So you too, you don't follow one straight direction of like, okay, you're like not Wiccan, you're not sharp. Right. It's like you pick all the things and put them together to follow a path that you feel comfortable with, that right. You feel is your calling.
Mm-hmm. My medicine, so to speak.
Yeah, it's your medicine, which is great. So it's just, it all seems dark. It looks dark, just the aesthetics of it too.
Right.
But why is that?
Why do I think it comes across as dark, or why do you think I'm drawn to the dark, or why in general is it dark?
Let's start with why in general is it dark and work our way towards the other questions too, because they're all good ones.
So I would say that darkness and witchcraft go hand in hand, not only because I think of the core principles of the work, which are that internal work, that shadow work, the working with things in the unseen, the working with the dead, being on the fringes of society. And also, I would have to unfortunately say that I think that some of the bastardization of witchcraft over the years, and like not just what we now know as modern day witchcraft, when we're talking about like Gaelic stuff, when we go back to the witch cults of Europe, you know, that's where people were burned. Nobody was burned in Salem. Like, people need to get over and learn their history about witchcraft in the United States. But I think that some of that darkness is just the nature of these entities that we're working with, because I don't think that they exist in like a, this, while I have moments where cosmic and galactic energy is needed for work and can be the focus of work and workshops and things that I attend, everything that we work with in the craft belongs to this planet. Like the witch father, the witch mother, the queen of bones, they all belong to the planet. They're not, yes, everything came from space because we're all extraterrestrials, given the fact that all of the material that exists on this planet had to come from somewhere else to generate, yada, yada, yada.
But now, right? We're living on Gaia and it's a different story.
Right. So the Earth was not always the Earth that we see it today. The Earth was dark and it was dank, and it was hot, and it was cold, and it's been so different from what we experience it. And I have never had the conversation with any of these deities to know, were you here before humans? Were they? Because then the Earth that they inhabit would be a good indicator of the form in which they take. Also, when we think about just like influence, right, of images. Like when you go to the grocery store, you're seeing 10,000 images on average. So thinking about life and all of the times that people have told me that the devil is a red skinned man with horns and a tail, like how many times do I have to break down that image before I can fully experience like Lucifer for what he is, or Hecate, or, you know, all of these different entities? Like, we've been taught and told what they look like, either from books or from media, because magic, for some reason, and the occult, while laughed about by common folk is one of the most interesting forms of entertainment. I mean, some of the most highly successful movies have been around those topics, and shows as well. So I think that those couple of things, the fact that these things are old, is I think potentially one of the reasons that it all comes across as dark, because the world that we live in today is not the world that maybe these things originated from. Two, media and film and shows, I think, program some of that darkness. And then I think just like when looking at the path of the witch historically, it was not the kitchen witch, you know, cottage aesthetic that you see all over Instagram and on YouTube. It's just not. It was, you know, women and men, you know, mostly women that were out in the woods, like living off the land, really only coming, like getting asked for help when doctors and the normal parts of the world weren't able to fix whatever was ailing the mundane villagers or whatever. So I think all of those things kind of make it come across as dark, but there's a comfortability for that to me too, which I don't maybe know exactly how to explain, but like white, like an all white room is anxiety to me. That is super anxious. Maybe that's because I'm water and earth, like placements in my chart, and it's just mud and I'm of this place and I want to be like in it rather than away from it. But that white not here is harder for me for some reason than dark down there type of centering. It's just easier for me to really just kind of like go ghost or go dark and fall into that, versus if somebody was leading a ritual or something and being like, walk into this white room, it would probably evoke a physical response in my body, because that's not something I could easily do.
So how do you think the world once was? Where they come from? Where they are?
Well, that's just, I don't know. I'd like to imagine that.
Did you ever ask them?
I haven't actually asked them like how old they are or like where they go when we're done talking. I would like to believe, that's a good question actually. I might just ask them, but I've always kind of believed that there are layers, right? Like we know that reality has layers, but there's an old, I heard this when I was a kid too. If you turn to the side and you see something run past you,
you've
caught a glimpse of the, like you've both did that on both sides of your, of the wall, so to speak. And so I've always kind of imagined that, you know, once I started working with spirits and deities, that those things were all like, they're just always there. Like when I do that and stuff, I acknowledge it now and I'd be like, hey, like what, whoever and whatever you are, because I'm not, I don't have sight like that. I'm not sighted like that to see people. I have friends, and one of the people that I work with, like on a psychic level, like going to for, you know, like annual, I go for annual check-ins and things like that. She is sighted like that. And it's kind of freaky because it's really hard to fake rapid eye movement. And the way that Marjorie sees is like, she's like scanning this wavelength of light that's coming out of the body. And I mean, you see her eyes like almost like ticker tape, like my energy and things. And when I saw that for the first time, I was like, okay, like this is no joke. Like, she also just knew things that she shouldn't have known. But you, so I'm John Miller Brooks III, but I go by Miller Brooks because my grandfather and my dad have the same name, and there wasn't like a third option for John, because we called my grandpa Daddy John and my dad Little John, so they called me Miller. She would never know that. I'm not on any social media as Miller. I mean, I literally Googled tried to find any way that she could have pulled that name to debunk her, because she goes, yeah, there's this old dude here. He's plaid button up, all the way buttoned up, khaki pants, brown belt, and a baseball cap with two golden retrievers on it. And it's like, I mean, that's my grandfather. And I was like, oh, okay, like, that's cool. She probably saw that on Facebook or something. You know, I'm trying to like debunk it. And then she's like, yeah, his name's John. And it was just like, started crying. Oh, it was great.
His first run into a psychic.
Yeah, like the first time where I was like, I mean, I went in with tests, like, what's my spirit animal? And she's just like, wolf. She's like, he's behind you. I'm just like, okay, that's weird. Like, I mean, I like threw him at her. I mean, it was really, she's like, are we done testing now? It's funny. So yeah, I think that answers that question.
Yeah, but oh man, I don't like it, because sometimes I feel that in readings, or rather when I went through my certification for the Akashic readings with Andy, and I did the free readings in order to like finish the certification, I sometimes felt that people were like kind of testing me in the readings to see if I really was psychic or not. And yeah, I know some people were quite surprised, but then I would never do that. I never like enter a person's energy field without express permission.
Right.
I don't do that. It's totally unethical for me. And how do you see that?
I choose not to read for people. Like people have randomly asked me over the years, like for one card tarot readings, and even though like I obviously don't read tarot for anyone but myself, I've done it for friends in the past, but it's just not something that I like to do, because it's not like the energy of pulling the cards and reading, you know, and interpreting them is that daunting, but more than likely that person's going to speak after you explain, and so you're going to have this like this passing back and forth of energy, and that sometimes is negative, and I just don't want it. Like I've had lots of friends who read for people and they're not cleansing themselves, not cleansing their deck, not doing all the proper work to like keep them clean, and then they get super, I'm already so energetically sensitive to other people that I don't really like want to add, like even like the work I do, like I'm not going to be doing probably like work where I imbue anything or like put my essence into something. I don't really like the idea of being energetically or sympathetically linked to anybody. I want to make products and things for people to use. Like I've done all the work up until the point where they have to do the last step, but it's not tied to me. I don't really like that type of stuff. I don't really like when people, I agree with you. I don't throw like my energy or try to invade people's energies without like express permission, unless something feels, you know, like in defensive situations, that's a little different. Like if I feel really uncomfortable, like at a club or with people, or we're walking home with friends that are females and stuff is weird, like I throw out that kind of negative stuff at people, but I don't really like exchanging any kind of exchange of energy work. Like I probably will never do Akashic readings like for people, like even if I were to get certified and do all of that work, I just don't feel called to do that, to like to work with people on that level. I like providing tools, I like talking to people. I would much rather be like a spiritually minded therapist or sounding board for people rather than that, where like they really trust me and like there is this really intense link, because trust is one of the more sympathetic things that can attach you to people in magic than anything else. Trust is like a big door in everyone's mind, and once that's open, it's very hard to close. Sometimes they can really mess people up. So yeah, I do not feel called to do that. I've never really felt called to work with anybody like on cards or have psychic readings or past life stuff. Or I just, you know, like I said, I'd rather be like a spiritually minded therapist. I have people go on Instagram all the time, be like, hey, can you video chat for 5 minutes? I've got this problem and I just need to talk, or I just need to vent. I am much better at that. I am a much better listener and advice giver in a maybe a mundane sense with a magical twist, because I don't really like to use magic to affect other people's lives other than my own. Like, I don't do spell work for other people, really, like, unless it's something really, really dire. Like, I've done some spell bag work for people that were dealing with, like, entities in their home, and but I also don't really want to do exorcism work. Like, I don't want to be known to be the person to come pull something nasty out of your house, even though I've done it before. That's really draining. Like, for weeks after burning that bag was like, I had to recharge. It just takes a lot of energy to move something elsewhere. So yeah, I can't do it every day, like, for sure.
Well, that's totally fine. I don't do it every day too. I mean, I've got a full-time job which is paying my rent and food on my table and everything, so for me, readings are still happening on the side, which I'm very comfortable with, because it allows me to move and evolve at my own pace without any pressure, and that's wonderful. Mm-hmm. That's really important to me. And yeah, so how do you plan on serving your medicine from now on into the future?
So I think that right now I'm at a huge, like, I feel like I just got to the top of a mountain and I've got to go down a little bit, and I'm probably going to have another uphill in a little bit. I consider life just a series of mountains. We're always going to have our ups and our downs, yeah. But I feel very blessed and thankful. I feel like I'm at a bit of a peak right now and maybe coming down and going to start something new, but I've got products coming out that I really want people to be able to use my goal, I think, is to help people ritualize their mundane lives. It, as somebody with ADHD, sorry, I had a cat hair in my mouth. structure has always been beneficial for me, not just in my magical world, but like when I know I have a really big day, I schedule almost every minute of it. And that sounds a little OCD and crazy, but it really helps me. But I think that people, especially people starting out, and I don't like the term baby witch, but I'll say beginner witch, there are little ways that we can ritualize our daily life. I really want to write potentially at length about this subject. Maybe a book, maybe. but like I, for example, when I take a shower, I have rules with regards to what goes in what hand and how many times I do certain things. And that sounds OCD and crazy, but it is like my shower.
Is that not OCD and crazy?
I mean, maybe a little bit. You don't have to do that. You can choose which hand you choose to brush your teeth with, but stick to that choice. If you've been brushing your teeth, I challenge you, Mandy, if you've been brushing your teeth with your right hand for years, yeah, try tonight to brush with your left. Okay, because I think Aidan Wachter said something like that in his book, Six Ways. Changing little things, little habits like that will reprogram the brain.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And no, it does. Andy said that too in her workshops.
Yeah, it's wild, because I did that. I went from like left or right to left for a couple months. And every time, that's another thing, guys, when you make a decision like this, do not be mean to yourself if you forget. Like, if you pick up the toothbrush with your right hand and you start brushing, and then you notice, you know, 30 seconds in, that's fine. Take the toothbrush out of your mouth, rinse it off, put some more toothpaste on, and start the process over again. But just remember to do that. And think of, see what little like differences you notice in your daily life when you add these little moments of ritual. Like in the shower, like I said, like I scrub like my hair with my shampoo bar like 27 times, like just because that's a number that I like. It's a perfect amount of stuff. And I know, and then I put it back. But like there are all kinds of little rules and things that you can do for your daily life that will give it a magical sense. Like even like tying, like the new tea that I just pulled out or put out on my website is called Self Love. And it's a tea to help ritualize the act of self-care. Because when you have a day, when you're not feeling great, maybe having like that moment where I'm like questioning myself, I just don't feel good, or I just need a day for my fucking self. the first thing that I do is go get this tea blend that I've made, and I tie a couple gratitudes into the strings of the tea bag. I have two strings. You know, I am grateful for my mother, because I watched this movie last night called My Octopus's Teacher on Netflix. And if you haven't seen it, you should see it, because it's amazing. Did you know octopuses give almost their entire body in nutrients to their young, because they have almost half a million children? So moms, true moms, are octopi, because they will give everything for their children. And that was like, so gratitudes into a tea bag. You know, if you do use bath salts or something like that, every handful of bath salts, say something nice about yourself. Say a prayer to whatever deity or saint or whatever cosmology you're working with at the time. You know, I used to get annoyed with like mom being like, you gotta make sure you say your prayers before bed. Like, but do that. Like, sit down. I write in a journal now every day when I go to bed. I write the date and I say, I will remember my dreams, because I have difficulty with recall sometimes, probably because of the amount of weed I smoke, but because
cannabis.
So I kid you not, first night I wrote down, I will remember my dreams tonight. I remember my dreams. That little notebook's by my bed, and I write down my little thoughts. And it sounds silly, and it sounds so simple, but these things will add so much magic to your life. These little itty bitty things. Like there's so many examples. I mean, there's so many examples. Every time I drive past a graveyard and I'm wearing any kind of necklace, I kiss it. Like, I pull it up to my mouth and kiss it, just like a Christian would kiss a cross. Or every time I visit a grave, I'm wearing a specific necklace. I have specific jewelry for specific things in my life. I'm not wearing any rings now. But like, if I was going out to work at a graveyard, I'd have a couple different pieces of jewelry that I would have to wear, because it's part of my ritual of going to the graveyard. I can't say it enough. These little things will add so much to your life.
Listening to your talk makes me feel like so cozy, so nice. How does that fit together with like talking to demons?
Oh, okay. So this is another, so demons are another one of those things that I think have been bastardized, right? Like, there's a lot of people, myself included, who are of the thought that angels and demons are the exact same thing, but they have a duality to them as well. So am I asking for the chthonic Michael, or am I asking for the angelic Michael? What am I looking for? Am I looking to get rid of something in my life? Am I looking to protect me from something in my life? Which correspondence makes the most sense? For me, angels, they're another thing that's so hard to unprogram. They're the warriors of God. They are scary. Like, to think like the whole babies with the cute freaking faces and the halos and the wings. How do we know that the biblical angels, as described in, I think they're described in a couple different books, how do we know that that's not what demons are? Like, that, because they, I mean, these guys were like supposed to be like, I mean, like John Cena jacked, like, and scary, like intimidating, like 50-foot tall beings with like swords and armor and wings and dark skin. And like, I mean, they were scary, badass creatures. And so I think that all of the love and all the great, amazing things that I talk about in my daily life, and then like when I go to talk to the like chthonic entity, like Murmur is one of the people that I talk to a lot. I don't know. That's just, to me, it's like, I was friends with the monsters under my bed when I was a kid. So it's just not scary to me. I don't think of a demon as something negative that's going to fuck up your life and possess you. Or number one, I don't think they have the power to possess human beings by themselves. So I should say, I think you could definitely invoke something strong enough to have it potentially like have some kind of control, but not, you have to make that decision. That's a human choice. You still have free will and you have a body. So most of the time you fucking win. I mean, really, I tell people that all the time. They're like, I'm scared to open this grimoire, or I'm scared to do this. And I'm like, please don't be scared, because you have a body and you win. Like, you've won already. Like, they want you to be afraid. Like, and not just like, actually, I should say that the higher powers of the human world want you to be afraid. Demons don't want you to be afraid. They want a relationship with you. These things, like, can you imagine, like, the hundreds of years that deities and things were just not worked with in the way that they were worked with because of fear of persecution, either burning of materials and relics and all of that stuff. I mean, it breaks my heart. Like, and I'm going to deviate from the demons for a second, but like going to a graveyard, one of my favorite graveyards in Lancaster, when I lived in Pennsylvania, was always the only person there. It is extremely sad to me that we have neglected, like, just the old, like the things that came before us. Necropolis literally translates to city for the dead. Graveyard and cemetery and all these things, I mean, they are cities for our dead, and they are neglected, and no one goes to talk to these people. I've been drawn to work with, like, the spirits of the graveyards that I work with, like the main ones, are always older, you know, things that haven't, somebody's probably not talked to William for 150 years until I showed up. He died in 1856. Like, who's the last person that sat there and talked to that spirit? Like, the gone or dead doesn't mean gone. And I'm sorry. I just got like upset a little bit because it does make me extremely sad that,
Did you ever send one of them over?
Send who over?
Like one of the spirits that you meet there.
In the graveyard, you mean? Yeah. Like, have I ever accompanied somebody like on a...
To the other side, for lack of a better word.
Not anyone that I... So I work with people that are so old that I don't think that I don't think I have anybody from a graveyard that I've worked with that like has not traversed the veil. That's another thing. I'm one of those people, and even though we say the veil is thinnest on Beltane and Samhain for witchcraft, the veil is always thin. You just have to know where to look. But my ancestors, like my grandfather is always with me, like for Samhain rituals or anything where I'm like, if my ancestors are in journey or invited to be in journey, he is always there. It saddens me that my grandmother is not, but she was a devout Christian Scientist. And that's actually a religion here in the United States. I don't know if that is over there too, but it's like they don't believe in doctors and some other stuff. And I think that witchcraft was probably one of those things that she would not have approved of, even though I think she was a bit of a witch herself. That's unfortunately something that we have to accept when we start doing ancestor work and start working with the dead people that reside in our own families. We not everybody wants a seat at your table, and also not everybody deserves a seat at your table. If somebody is, if Uncle Joey was a racist and a homophobe and a transphobe, he doesn't automatically get a seat at your table. I only invite people in my path personally, my dead and my guides, anybody that is with me, that only choose, they have to choose every time to follow me in the path that I am on in that moment, because it changes all the time. And I can't demand that everything that I work with approve of every decision and everything that I make. I just can't. If I go down a different path and for some reason it doesn't resonate with the spirit of my grandfather or my great grandmother or whoever, I might unfortunately be welcoming a new member to the dead of the family soon, but hopefully not. Like, she's struggling, so I want her just to move on and be, it's a hard one, right? When they're like, they're obviously miserable, but you don't really want them to die, but you do want them to die.
You want like a release.
Right. But unfortunately that only releases death for her. She has ALS, so it's going to be a something's just going to eventually stop working, and something critical. Yeah. And then, so that sucks, but that's a part of life. I'm actually really struggling with like what my cousins that live very close to my grandmother that's about to pass. And I want, you know, I want so badly to bring them white candles dressed with imparos of Gabriel and say, every time you want to talk to Mimi, you light this candle and you just tell her, you know, how was school today? Or, but I'm afraid, I am a little afraid.
Does your family know about your craft that you're away?
Most of them do. I don't know if like the grandparents fully, like, you know, I don't know if mom's been like, hey, Miller's a witch now. Or like, you know. But I would, you know, for them, I would definitely dress it up a little more Christian. I have no problem with that. I have sigils for Archangel Gabriel on my right leg, as he is, you know, the westward watcher and the guardian of the dead. For the Abrahamic religions, that's who he is. So he, and he serves that job. So I would, like, you know, get a white candle and probably get like a placard card of Gabriel and like tie a string around it and just give them something, because this is going to be traumatic. I didn't really have to deal with my first like real death, the one that really affected me, until I was 18 years old. They're 7 and 9. It's going to be brutal for them, unfortunately, because they've always known Mimi. They've always lived less than 30 minutes from Mimi. It's going to be brutal. It's going to be brutal for everyone else in the family too, but I really focus on children a lot, especially in our family, because I want them to have everything. I want them to have everything that we didn't have, and in all of the ways that we were not, you know, we weren't guided. But you know, I can't do like a necromantic candle like I would traditionally for, you know, somebody that had lost somebody. Especially, you know, I'd make it a little bit more witchy, but there's workarounds for that. And I think that's something great too. Like, if somebody really did need me to help them with something, I think that I am skilled enough and knowledgeable enough in enough paths, being like this cafeteria occultist, to be able to help people in almost any regard. There are certain things I won't touch, being a white. I will not touch any of the Orisha hoodoo stuff. I wasn't invited. I never have been invited. I've had friends that say things like, you know, maybe in a little bit later on in life, like, you can come join us for this. I kind of stay away from it because it's not for me. And we already have, as a white male, even though I'm queer, I look straight passing, and which means that I have everything in the world pretty much, right? So there are certain parts of magic that need to be left for Indigenous and people of color, because we've stripped it from them in all kinds of other ways. And I have no offense to anybody who's white out there that practices these things. If you were invited, and, you know, it is a closed religion. So if you were invited, no worries. But if you weren't, you might want to do a little research and maybe find somebody in your local area that is a practitioner of those things that can maybe help you, I would say.
You just called yourself an occultist, but is there a difference between a witch and an occultist? If so, what's the difference, or how are they the same?
Okay. I would say, so the occult, when we were talking about facts earlier, right, like things that can be defined by fact, I would define the occult as anything that cannot be fully explained by the facts and sciences of today. Mm-hmm. So I think that certain parts of witchcraft and like, so deity, working with deities, working with spirit, that would fall in the list of things that cannot be explained by the sciences or the, what else did I say? The science of the day. So I think there is some overlap there. Just like Ardeth Bay, I want to not necessarily protect all of the secrets, but I've always wanted to know all of the secrets. So I think that the occult world is full of secrets. But I don't think that like somebody could, and nobody come for me by saying this, but I don't know if you could say that you're a practicing occultist. Like, I still think, I mean, maybe you can, but like I used to have that, there's the word witch on my profile, and it used to say occultist, but I changed it to witch because I think that you have to own that term a little bit based on kind of the fringe of society, outsider, you know, working in the shadows, we work in the dark and we walk among you. you kind of have to pay respects to that in some regard, but I lost my train of thought. Happens to me more and more as I get older and it worries me sometimes, but so I think that witchcraft would fall into the umbrella term of the occult. But I would say that like being an occultist in general is a little different because it's an umbrella term, right? So you could be, you could study the Goetia, you could study the Book of Enoch, you could do like all angelic and celestial magic, you could do traditional witchcraft or cunning folk magic, you could do hoodoo, voodoo, and all of that stuff is still under the umbrella term of the occult. But I think an occultist is someone who takes it upon themselves to know at least a general amount about all of the unanswered questions in the spiritual realm that in this existence of reality. And there's tons of stuff that we still don't know. I mean, and shame on the mummy a little bit because they made the Book of the Dead. It is a great movie. I love it so much. I mean,
it's awesome.
But the Book of the Dead is not a book that brings people back to life or any of that junk. It is a book. It is the manual for the recently deceased for Egypt. Like, and that's from Beetlejuice. They have like a handbook for the dying. And in the West, we do not have that. That's another thing that I think that I hope will be resolved, or that I could potentially help add, like answer that question or put together something with the help of other people in the community. There is no guidebook for dying here. And I think that that is one of the biggest mistakes of Western culture. There is a book or a step-by-step guide for what happens to you when you die and what happens to you in the afterlife for a lot of ancient cultures, Egypt being one of them. And we put so much focus and effort and energy into the ushering in of life, but pay very little attention to the processes in place for the ushering in of death and the after effects of death, both on the individual that's dying and the people that are going to be most affected by that loss. We don't. I mean, it's almost like a taboo topic still. Like, funerals are weird. Like, we have not figured it out, in my opinion. And the fact that graveyards are not visited the way that they once were, and we have just lost this huge connection to one of the main steps in the process of life. And I do believe it's not the last step, but that blows my mind. And I think that leads to the level of uncertainty and anxiety that surrounds the concept of death. And it's not necessary.
No, it's not at not. All. Oh man. But I feel that's a whole nother episode that I would want to talk with you about, because it's such an interesting thought. I never thought about that, but you are so right. I mean, there are whole cultures that like make death and dying a topic, but in Western culture, we really don't. We try to push it away as far as somehow possible, but also, and then, yeah.
Then you're left to deal with all of the, you know, I've seen movie after movie of somebody not processing their dad's death or their mother's death, and it having major negative implications in their life, like potentially like having a breakdown behind the wheel of a car and like hurting other people, if not yourself, or, you know, like just there's so much unneeded anxiety and fear around this topic. I mean, there's how many baby books, right? Like, what to expect when you're expecting, like month by month, all of the different, you know, all of the different materials available to people for this tiny moment, which is great, which is miraculous, right? It's birth is beautiful and amazing, but it's just the first, like the first little thing. And then you have 18 years of being a parent and, you know, really your whole life of being a parent. And then the first huge trauma that it's a constant. Like, my mom's going to die. Like, she is. At some point, she's going to die. Like, that. Everyone's going to lose their parents. Everyone's likely going to lose a grandparent. Hopefully for me, because I'm the oldest of four, I will not have to lose a brother. But my brothers are going to lose me. And that's just a fact of life. And I don't want anyone to just, again, it's so unnecessary, the pain and there's pain that's important and necessary to the grieving process, but I feel it is exacerbated by the lack of preparedness that we have.
Absolutely. So do you think being a witch is helpful in dealing better with death?
I think some people are better at it than others. I wouldn't say that. I don't know if that's even a magical question. I think that that's hard. So I'm just gonna say it because I don't care. I tried to kill myself once. And I was really close. I actually hurt myself like physically, and luckily I had a friend called me right as I started to bleed a lot. And I snapped out of it. But that is why I think I've almost died for real, but I've killed myself a million times. Mentally, like I have. I learned that day that I don't have to actually like cut my wrist and bleed to death. I can have the ritual of going into my mind and killing off the parts of myself that I no longer like, the parts of myself that no longer serve me, the parts of me that just are necrotic and decaying and potentially going to infect the rest of my body. So I have multiple poems about that I've put on Instagram. Like, I think the last lines are something like, when I wake up, I know I'll be all right because I kill myself almost every night. And I found the magic in this power lies in the dark and strangest of our dreams. That personally, that's why I have an easier time with death and hopefully helping people go through that. I know other people have their own stories as to why, either the experience of death at a very young age, which I did not have. I did not have anybody really close to me that I can remember at least die until I was 18 years old. But that experience, and you know, they used to say, my high school teacher used to say something along the lines of artists, unfortunately, or fortunately, are rare creatures in that they will always have a key to heaven and hell. Because they have to be able to traverse both the best and worst parts of themselves to birth forth creation that will move other people. So, I don't know. I feel like my whole like journey in life has just been learning to really accept the duality and the intersectionality of all of the things that make me who I am. But when it comes to death, having a pretty rocky, suicidal experience that I've never done it again, by the way. I learned to do it internally, and I try to educate other people to do the same. Even if you need to like hurt yourself, do it in your mind. If that is the only way that you can find some kind of release, do it in your mind, because it is not worth it. I have a silly little scar on my freaking left arm that I laugh at now because I was trying to, you know, I think it's a cliche that it's a permanent solution to a short-term problem. But ritualizing the act of death for yourself, like, and some people will say that's an ego death, even though I don't think ego completely dies until you die. I think it's an ego softening, maybe is a better way to describe that. But that's another part of this. Like, I kill myself all the time. It sounds silly. I used to want to put that in my profile because it was like, but it sounds real negative and dark and like too much. It sounds almost over the top, but.
Well, the thing is, you could say I kill myself all the time, but also another way of putting it is I am rebirthing myself all the time.
Right. And as a Scorpio, somebody recently asked me, where am I in my Scorpion Eagle Phoenix evolution? And I personally believe that we go, that's a cycle that's never ending. I feel like you go scorpion and then eagle and then phoenix, and then you die. And then you come back as a scorpion. And you just kind of like, I feel like I've gone through multiple phoenix, eagle, and scorpion phases in my existence. But yeah, I mean, I go, what does he say in Fantastic Four? Flame on. But like, yeah, it's a huge part of it. And we are also the death card in the tarot, which is the transformation card, not necessarily the physical, real, visceral death, but yeah, astrology's crazy. I'm not super good at astrology. I've got a couple friends that are so much better at it than I am, and I highly rely on their expertise for like transits and everything that's going on in the world, but I am a water and earth chart with a couple air signs, and it's an interesting existence being here with everyone. Because I just like.
But you being a Scorpio explains a lot to me, because actually one of my closest friends is a Scorpio too, and we just always have the most amazing conversations. So I'm a Virgo. I get along really well with Scorpios.
I'll call it a super Scorpio. I'm a Scorpio Sun, Rising, Mercury, Mars, and Pluto.
Ooh, holy cow.
With three planets in Capricorn and a Gemini moon. It's real weird.
Gemini node?
Moon.
Moon, all right. Oh, wow.
My true node is in Capricorn.
Holy cow. Yeah, I'm earth and water heavy too. I've got four planets in earth and four in water. Oh man, so much to talk about, but I think we got to come to an end for this podcast episode. Miller, tell people where they can find you.
All right. On Instagram, I am hermetic.arts. On Spotify and Anchor, you can find my podcast, Hal at the Moon. On my Instagram, there's a link for all of this stuff. And then my website for blog post and a couple of new products that just dropped yesterday is hermeticarts333.com.
Awesome. It was so great talking to you. Thank you so much. And I'm pretty sure I'll have you on again someday soon.
Awesome. Thanks.
See ya.
Bye.
Jeez, that talk has been a ride. I hope you enjoyed listening to it as much as I did recording it with Miller. What an awesome guy. I'm so honored and happy that he's not only been my first male guest, but also my first English-speaking guest and the first witch I ever interviewed. In the future, I hope to have him back to talk more about how to deal with death. People tend to look away from what they don't want to see, but that only makes matters worse. So let's stop looking away, but take a moment to become aware of what's going on, both inside and outside of us. I'm Mandy from Gaia's Healing. Thank you so much for listening.